winning 6 at home and 2 points off the drop zone, Reading FC are in seriously dodgy territory and treading water in seriously dangerous seas. In need of a hero, the townspeople are losing faith. Who will save the day? Whatever happened to Fortress Medeski? And is it time for Yapstam to pack up his cape and leave for good? Find out in the next 60 minutes as we discuss the Royals' 2-0 defeat to Middlesbrough on Saturday in episode 142 of the Tyler Sen Podcast. I am your host, Mark Mayo, and I'm joined by not one, but two extraordinary H's of Reading Football Club. You'll know them on social media. You'll get to hear from them now. It is, firstly, Stephen Hoops.
How's Hello. It going, mate? Yeah, it's very well, thank you. How are you?
I am all good. Even though we are talking about a defeat, I'm all good. All the better for the company. And I'm also joined on his second appearance on the Tyler Sen Podcast, I believe. It's Chris Hartley.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome. It's going to be a nice little show. We'll obviously have to talk about the defeat, sadly, but there's plenty on to talk about in terms of the mailbag. And we'll have some news bites of some good news that's happened around the world for Reading, which isn't something that we get to say very often. And also, obviously, thank you for everyone who's continuing to contribute to our Patreon campaign. Thanks to everyone just generally who's continued to listen and mailbag into the show under the new ownership, as it were, and continues to read the website under the new ownership as we continue to sort of find our feet in the sort of post-Wim era. We will kick on then with the recap.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So it was a 2-0 defeat to Middlesbrough on Saturday. It's the type of game that you went into thinking, you know, they're not in great form, they haven't won away in about 6 games or so. Are we going to be that charitable team who lets them break their bad run? Yes, we are going to be that charitable team who makes them break their bad run. As it always happens with Reading, we are the team. If you're on a bit of poor form, we will always help you out with that. It was a 2-0 defeat, and I think this really was, I mean, cutting through into summing up the whole 90 performance, I thought this was the definition of blowing hot and cold. We were good for 5 minutes, then awful for the next 25. What would you say, Steve? Would you say this was a case of a consistently awful performance, or did we actually have some nice good moments in there?
No, there were some good bright moments. There were some bright sparks. There were moments in the game where you thought, oh, we might actually get something out of this, but it didn't last long. Like, you never felt like they built up momentum for an elongated period of time. It very much felt like almost, oh no, we're not quite there. And then it's like 2 steps forward, 3 steps back. It was always like, ah, oh, just not quite there.
2 steps forward, 3 steps back.
Yeah.
That's more than 1 step forward, 2 steps back. It's in,
I know.
We're going quite far forward though, aren't we?
Yeah, going forward and then going even further back. Yeah, mixing it up a bit with my phrases today.
Yeah. I think the one positive is we had a striker up front that was leading the line, and you could sense that the midfield players, especially Liam Kelly, felt that he actually had someone to hit and find. And he did okay for the, you know, the team actually, I thought for the first 15 minutes prior to the penalty, did okay. They were up in a tempo.
Yeah, well, I think we started really well. I was sitting there thinking, because I predicted a defeat in the prediction league, and I sat there thinking for the first couple of minutes, like, oh God, I bet on the wrong horse. We're going to steam them. We're playing it around. There was a bit of risks. We were chasing the ball down well. I genuinely thought it was a good performance the first few minutes. It dropped off a little bit, and then we had that penalty. From my position, Joe Vandenberg took out a Sombolonga. It was a stonewall penalty as far as I could see. Have we got any disagreements with that?
No. From the north stand, from the Eamon Dolan, looking down the pitch, I did think, why is he given that? And then I saw the highlights.
He gave it because
he pulled his arm back.
It was such a stupid thing for him to do, but this is what Vandenberg does. He has bright moments, you know, he does really good things, and then it feels like he always lets himself down with one moment or two of just pure stupidity, and that was it. You know, as you said, we started the game really, really well, looked like we were getting positive, like momentum and getting the tempo, and then lets the team down by doing something like that. And yeah, I get really annoyed with Joey.
Yeah, it's back to the sort of Joey the liability case, isn't it? He'll give you 3 games, he'll give you that pass against Leeds where you think, oh, he's actually got a bit about him, and then he does that. And I didn't think he had a particularly great game, generally speaking, against Borough. Kind of middling, but that with that one individual error, it isn't great. The thing is, that did have its big effect. And I think the problem for me wasn't so much that there was a, you know, that we were kind of not taking the risks, that we were being too negative. I felt we did take a fair few risks, but there wasn't quite, we just didn't connect the passes. The passes maybe we ran the ball out of play at the touchline too much. We had it at going out of the byline. And when we had that, we didn't respond by taking, you know, another risk and we'll keep a momentum up. We just had a serious dearth of tempo and that momentum slips away so easily. And then we just slips back into this kind of real boring lack of magic sense that we've endured for all season.
I agree.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this style of play that Stam asks for and expects is a confidence game. And giving away a penalty like that and, you know, being knocked for six kind of when the momentum is in your favour and you're then conceding a goal, it just means that the side, the squad, then just regress. And rather than keep it up and take those risks, they're going, oh, we've conceded. We'll then go back to the very basics of what Stam expects. And it's not working at the moment. So I don't know why they insist on sticking to it, you know, like, oh, you're looking good and then you can see the penalty, we'll just keep going. So there's obviously a mentality problem there where they get slightly knocked off course and then they just go, okay, we'll play it safe and just knock it around slowly.
But that's strange, isn't it? Because last year we felt they had a really good mentality. We felt like the squad was really together, they were driving each other on, we had a few comeback wins such as away at Bristol City. But this year, I mean, that's the last thing I expect we're going to do when we're 2-0 down now, is come back into the game. And it just seems like a real fragility has emerged almost out of nowhere with this team.
Even at 1-0, you never thought they were going to get a goal. That's how I felt. Mm. I mean, there was one really good move where Smith got a head onto the ball, but he didn't have enough of a direction onto it. He kind of toiled away up front, waiting for the ball. I think Liam Kelly is off form, but I think in part because of the movement in front of him is not good enough.
He's off form, but isn't he our highest scoring player?
Still is.
Is he on four?
Yeah,
he is the equivalent of banging in the goals at the moment, which is not quite so much for Reading.
Especially when he hasn't really been playing that often recently.
No.
I think the one positive you can take out of this game is that Sam actually did play a proper striker this time around. You know, I wrote an article for the Tyler SN saying, if he's your only striker and you have no goal threat up front, you've just got to go for it, risk it. And I know I can't remember your name, but someone on Twitter was saying that's the opposite of what you should do, because you can't throw a young player into that kind of situation because it might damage his confidence and all this kind of thing. But I think, as we saw on Saturday, actually, it's kind of a no lose situation. You know, if he does badly, then oh, he's young. If he does well, it's something the fans can get behind. So
I think it's safe to assume that Sam Smith was desperate to start. Yeah. There was no reason why Sam Smith wouldn't have wanted to start that game. He is a footballer. He wants to score goals. And you know, this striker malarkey might have something in it. He caused problems for Ben Gibson, who's a quality defender. Got a few shots on. Yeah, we can say that he didn't score. There maybe could have done better, but this is what you have with academy strikers.
I went to the League Cup game against Millwall, his second start for the first team, and
in which he scored,
and he ran the channels. He worked across the defenders, and against Millwall, these defenders are very experienced centre backs. They're no mugs. He worked hard. I mean, he's not the complete finished article, but at the moment, without Bodvarsson and a half at Kermigan, you've got no other choice.
I think, yeah, at the moment, you have no idea what his potential is. You don't know what his ceiling is, whether he'll be a Prem player, whether he'll drop down to League 1, 2. You just don't know that at the moment. But where we are at the moment, where there is like little goal threat, you've just got to play a striker, someone that at least wants to score a goal in the team, and that's what they look for.
And I think on Saturday it was noticeable in the first 15 minutes where they were playing well that they had a focal point. He offered them a focal point. He offered them someone to work off and run off, and you know, they have lacked that considerably when they haven't had Bodvarsson and when they haven't had Kermigan. They haven't had that person up front that's willing to make a move and then players finding space, because I think there was an example in the first half where Swift managed to, might have been second half, where Swift, the ball fell to him on the edge of the box, and then they managed to work a nice move. It didn't end up in much, but Swift managed to find that little bit of space that has been lacking.
Yeah, we haven't found extra little pockets of space for a while. And the thing is with Smith is, yes, it's a positive that we played him and he did well, but doesn't it just bring back that fact that against, you know, Sheffield United and other games we've had this season, we've opted against playing a striker. I think the way that Smith played on Saturday sort of proved that he should have been playing, because, you know, Sheffield United, we played, I think it's Barrow and Behrens up front. Defenders looking at Behrens are not going to be worried in it at all. They look at Barrow and they think, yeah, he's quick, but we don't play the ball over the top. So it's irrelevant that he's quick, because he's going to be played into feet and he's going to knock it round more. So that frees up, from an opposition point of view, that freed up all of the Sheffield United defence to basically do as they please. And that is such an important thing when you take players out of the game. We took the Middlesbrough centre-backs out of the game in that sense, because they had Smith to worry about.
Yeah, and I think if I remember correctly, Sheffield United played three out front, three at the back. They played the 3-5-2, and it was just so easy for them to... They had that spare man constantly, because there was no, they had no one to worry about up front from our perspective. And quite frankly, I felt sorry for the Sheffield United goalkeeper last week.
That's not a good feeling as a fan, is it?
He had no shots to save, but he still managed to concede a goal.
From Roy Behrens as well. That's a kick in the teeth. Is there a case to be made then for thinking about it from the other point of view, from maybe giving Stam a little bit of credit that he did play Smith, etc., etc., that this was kind of a game where the game of football, as I like to say, it was against you, where you put out a decentish lineup, not great, you've got some injuries, you put out a lineup that's hard to argue with, as I sort of describe it. Individual error for the first goal. You can't legislate for Van den Berg taking out a man. You can not play him, but then who else are you going to play at defensive mid? Their second goal, I thought, was pretty decent. In the grand scheme of things, it was a good ball in. It was a good header. We fell a little bit of sleep. But, you know, those sort of things come down. That decides the game, really. And as Stam said, we have no luck at the moment. And we certainly didn't have any on Saturday.
No. But equally, I think the second goal was such an easy goal to stop.
I thought I did. I rewatched the highlights and I was just like, it's a well-worked goal, but it's so preventable. You know, like, the striker got in between the two centre-backs, and sure, they were subbed on and, you know, not first choice, but it was silly to let that happen, because that's, like, basics, you know, keep your eye on the man, don't let him get in between you. And
I would also argue that in that position, Middlesbrough were on the front foot, they could sense blood. Blackett got exposed again for the cross. Second goal.
Well, I think it wasn't
tight enough.
It was a case where they had a shot already, and Moore had sort of thrown himself heroically in the way, so Moore was out of position. Blackett was obviously trying to cover back, because it was a bit of a counter attack, and then the ball was a good cross. And yeah, as you say, Asambolonga, should he be winning that header? Maybe not. As soon as he wins it, it's game over. And one of the things I did notice was that the crowd, I actually thought, for the criticism that the crowd got a couple of weeks ago, I thought the crowd, you know, let's say they had a good game, they were there for the taking, the crowd. Every time there's a bit of momentum or a bit of a surge, really felt like the crowd at Mazzetti Stadium was there. They were ready to get behind the team at the moment's notice. And, it, you know, they did get behind it when it happened, but as soon as that second goal went in, you were the normal sort of, around me I was hearing, oh, it's same old, there were the usual complaints you sort of hear. And that was reflected in the team, because the team sort of gave up at 2-0 as well.
Yeah, I think going back as well to what you said earlier about giving Stam credit, I do think he does deserve credit for playing Smith. And that lineup, you couldn't really argue with the lineup either. So, you know, he's not totally stuck in his ways and he will refuse to play the striker he's got on the bench because he doesn't like him or something, you know. So he's taking little risks and little gambles, but some things like Roy Behrens. I mean, I've mentioned on this podcast before, he obviously likes him for some reason that no one else knows, but I don't know why he keeps getting in the side.
It's because he's Dutch, mate.
Yeah. if you're Addy Popper or Adrian Popper, you've got to be looking and thinking, season Romanian international, gives his all for the team whenever I've seen him play. Might not, you know, not the greatest of quality of player, but he's an energy player. And he definitely adds something more than Behrens does at this moment in time for me.
I'd even argue that someone else on the pitch, i.e. Aluko, would be looking at Behrens going, why are you playing there? I can play there. I played there for Fulham. I can do that. Why are you being there? You know, I mean, I'm sure that's not actually going through his head when he's on the pitch.
I wouldn't play against it. Player's competitive.
He might just be going, I can't believe I've moved to Reading and I'm being played in central midfield when there's this left winger keeping me out of the left wing who can barely do anything at the moment.
There was a point in the first half where there was a ball that was played up to him and he just did not chase down at all. He didn't, there was no energy there. There was no.
I think as well, that'll be why the fans don't get on with Behrens that much, because he does seem quite chilled out and lackadaisical. You know, he's not really the type of player that will go gunning for it. And that's why I think we haven't seen much of Popper. But actually, when we have, a lot of fans have really liked him because he is all over the place. He will run up and down all day. And that's something that Reading fans historically have loved.
He's all action. And I think that's what I like about Popper. He's not the greatest quality. I'd even go for Callum Harriott as well in that. I know Callum Harriott's not available at the moment, but I'd also argue that that's a similar trait that Callum Harriott has, where he will just get
Callum Harriott can pop a ball in from miles out. Yeah, but it just reminds, you know, Jay Tab as well. He wasn't even that great, but we loved him because he was everywhere, and we just like those kind of players. And when things aren't going great for you, you need those players in your team, because even if they're off form or not the best quality, so long as they're going for it, that's all the fans want to see, really, especially at the moment.
I just want to see a team that's giving 100%, and I think there are players out there at this moment in time when things are going badly that just switch off and just don't try hard as they can.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, if Stan goes relatively soon, what it is that, you know, usually the club would release a statement or something saying that X and Y has gone wrong and that's why we're unhappy with it. It'd be interesting to see if that sort of changes at all as the, you know, weeks and Stam's period perhaps comes towards an end. We'll talk a little bit more about Stam in the mailbag, because, you know, obviously a lot of people are asking who we're going to replace him with, etc., etc. There's a lot of questions on Stam, but I will say that, or I will quote him rather, in that he did talk to, I think it's Get Reading quoted him saying after the game on Saturday, where he did address the issue of if someone else was going to take charge. He did as follows say, if people need to take other choices, then that's how it goes. I like the club. If somebody can, somebody else can do it better and get better results, then the board need to make that decision. That's how it is. We work very hard as a team and a staff and the players to try and get everything out of it. But if there's somebody out there that can do it a lot better, then they need to make that decision. I think that is Stan putting his cards on the table and saying, if you're going to sack me, sack me. But if you sack me and it gets worse, don't come crying back to old Yap Man, because that ain't going to happen.
I would argue that he's not going to walk. He's not. I don't think he's the type of man that would walk.
I don't believe he would walk when things are going this badly. If they're middling, or if they're, you know, if we were amid a transfer sort of saga, or one of his best players got sold against his wishes, I think he might walk. But not. I don't see it happening now.
No.
It felt, when I read that or heard it, I was a bit like, I don't know how I read that, because I read that, I think, differently to you guys. I was like, is that him saying, I've got as much of this as I'm doing and no one can do better than me?
As if he's conceding his own inabilities. Kind of,
yeah, that's the way I initially read it, but I don't know what he's really trying to say there. It feels a bit almost like an ultimatum to the board. Like, yeah.
I think also that at the moment we're seeing his relative lack of experience as a manager.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
He's only had, what, a year and 18, you know, about 18 months as a full first team manager. He managed a team somehow. Some fans will say to a playoff final last year. That's an achievement that you can't take away. He managed to get a team settled.
And that no one expected him to make?
No.
I think also talking about inexperience, not only is Stam inexperienced, but Tevreden is also inexperienced.
Oh, yeah.
The owners are inexperienced.
Yeah.
That, like, the CEO isn't inexperienced, but he's new to the club. And so all of the top guys are all new, and they're all kind of probably still finding their feet and deciding what to do. And so it's like you've got no one there that's been there for ages, apart from Hal, but no one there that's knows what's going on, knows how to run the club, and knows what they're kind of aiming for. You've kind of got loads of inexperienced heads right at the top who are all probably right now going,
Yeah. And we're not in a transfer window. This, especially with Tevreden, we're not in a transfer window at the moment. So you can't just go and say, oh, well, I really like this player at the moment, let's go sign him, he'll solve all our issues. We've still got the same squad that we had in, you know, August, when we were doing crap in August. So there's no reason why this squad would necessarily be doing so much better so soon after that.
Having seen the squad, though, the one criticism that I will make of Tevreden in that August window is it's very unbalanced. There's no cover for fullbacks at all. Abita, if Gunter goes down,
Well, we played McShane at right back on the, the weekend, didn't we? That's your cover.
Yeah, so it's very thin on the ground in terms of defenders, but we're very heavy in wingers.
Yeah, fullbacks and strikers, I think, especially in this system, are two of the most important roles in the whole 4-3-3 possession Dutch styling. Mm. And we've got no depth
in, they're the ones in that either of them.
It's like, okay, so what's going on? You know, we've got stacks of wingers, stacks of midfielders, but strikers and fullbacks.
I said last week we're trying to out midfield opponents.
Yeah.
The sad thing is that midfield ain't where the goals are scored and or stopped. So
no. Although I will say one thing, Chris Gunter, as much as people criticise him, he will do a job for the team. On Saturday he started at left back and played right back, and I think exactly the same at Sheffield United the other week, where he started at right back and ended up at left back. It's, you know, he's that ultimate pro where he won't moan about where he plays. That's the one thing I will say about Chris Gunter.
Yeah, I think Gunter's the type of player that you wouldn't get rid of Gunter first from this team. You'd get rid of a large amount of players before you got rid of someone like Chris Gunter, wouldn't you? And well, we'll leave the Stam issue to the side for one moment, and we'll discuss some, generally speaking, some good news in the News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So one of the major incidents from Saturday's game that we haven't had the chance to discuss just yet, but we'll talk about it now in the News Bites, is that there was a bit of a heads clashing. We say put your heads together for some nice defensive ideas, Thiago Aloy and Liam Moore. We did not mean this literally or with that much force. Thiago Aloy, he was quite worryingly down for some time. In fact, he stood up immediately after his sort of head clash and then went straight back down again, which is always a bad sign that, you know, someone's suffering from concussion or something, perhaps even worse. Fortunately, as it happens, after having the not great sign of him being stretchered out in front of the Eamon Dolan stand and onto an ambulance at half-time, he is now recovering at home, having been discharged from hospital. And he's posted this evening on Instagram just to confirm that he's not doing too badly, and he's thanking all the medical staff and the fans and the Middlesbrough medical staff as well, who helped him and Liam Moore at the time. And you can see he's a... Me and my family are humbled by his support, he says on Instagram, with hashtag Liam Moore has a big ass head. Which is quite ironic, really, considering Liam Moore came off quite badly from that incident as well, didn't he?
He was led down for some time as well, Liam Moore.
I remember seeing him rushed off down the tunnel with a big bandage towards his head, which was very much a case of, we're going to stitch you up, because if you can't play and this other bloke ain't going to play, we're going to have no defenders left.
I was... quite surprised that they allowed Liam Moore to continue. That's just a personal opinion, considering all the issues around concussions that are going around at the moment that you're finding in other sports. But it wasn't just a minor clash of heads, this was a full force coming together of a clash of heads. So I was quite surprised that the medical staff allowed him to continue.
Well, you know, they're the professionals, and we trust their judgment. But as we were saying just off air then, if Moore and Aloy went down, because Blackett came on and McShane shifted over to centre back, if both of them went out, you're talking about having a Paul McShane and Joey Vandenberg centre back partnership with Tyler Blackett and Chris Gunter as fullbacks, which
first choice defence, that is.
Yeah. That's what I've been asking for all along. If we had that, would be great.
I remember the annals of last season when we started with that before Moore and Blackett arrived at the club, and to say that they were slow at that point is an understatement.
It's a dearth of pace, is how I describe it. Well, in better news, we also had Jan Kermigant come back from injury against Middlesbrough, and he came on for the last 10 minutes, played in a real nice pass, actually, is the one thing that I noticed. He was thrown up front, basically, as Stam threw everyone back on. But hopefully, Kermigant, again, I'd imagine he'll be on the bench for Forest on Tuesday, maybe starting Derby on Saturday. I would imagine certainly starting after the international break when he's had some time to get some under-23 action under his belt. Speaking of the underage groups, Danny Loader is a world champion, and he's not even the first world champion that Reading have had this year. Following Luke Southwood, Danny Loader, part of the under-17 world championship winning team in India. Southwood was the sub-goalkeeper for the under-20s in the summer. This is some really good news. There is no negative to this news, is there?
No, and I think immense credit needs to go, you know, first to Eamon Dolan, but also to the rest of the academy staff and recruitment and all of this. You know, it's just such a big deal for a championship club to have two academy graduates play in those teams, be called up to those teams, and then win with those teams. You know, it's a huge credit to all the youth academy staff, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I would never have thought growing up supporting Reading that we would produce two players of that calibre that would be in England squads, not only just in England squads, but winning England squads. That feels bizarre to say as a sentence anyway, but
yeah, obviously now though comes the difficulty with fans then saying get him in the team,
as soon as there's any sort of gold route it's going to be Danny Loader is the man we have to play. And the thing is, I think it's always important to remember that the under 17 is a little bit too early to tell if they're going to make it anyway. But Danny Loader still, I mean, he wasn't the star striker of this. He played against Iraq and scored twice, came on to late sub against US. Obviously, the players in front of him were playing for, you know, the Liverpool, Man City.
Yeah.
Far, far better clubs than we will probably ever be. But it's just nice to have him there. It's good experience. As a fan, I don't expect to see him on the bench as soon as he gets back.
No.
Just let him do his time in the academy, then send him on loan maybe next season. And if he keeps developing like we think that he probably can, then that's great news.
Let's face it, I think Southwood's a lot further down the line. Well, as a goalkeeper, I think he's out on loan at Bath.
Oh yeah.
At the moment, gaining valuable experience there. I would expect maybe next season that he might be in the mix to be number two goalkeeper behind Manone, or even number three, perhaps.
Yeah, depending on what league we're in, I guess.
Yeah, but
I've got a question for the pod. What do you reckon? Who is further in the pecking order, Sam Smith or Danny Loader?
Smith, for me.
Because Loader played in pre-season as well, didn't he?
Yeah, but Smith started against Millwall, whereas Loader came on as a sub in the League Cup. Okay. So I would say that's the determining factor.
I think for me, Loader, it's clear that he has talent. I mean, he scored four goals against QPR in that pre-season friendly. But I think with under-17s, and this is always ringing in my ear, it's very much a developmental age. And to rush Danny Loader into the side would just be the wrong thing for me at the moment.
Yeah, I often think that when it comes to under-17 and even the under-20s as well, I think that the players in that England squad are probably all roughly equal when it comes to their, you know, their physical talent. Some of them more developed than others, and technically some of them are better, but the determining factor in all of those under-17s will be a bit of luck, a bit of opportunities, but mostly down to their own mentality, their own willingness to put in the hard work. And I think that's the thing. That's where certain players lose out. That's where certain players kick on. And it just reminds me of when Steve Coppell was talking about Gylfi Sigurdsson a few weeks or a few months ago, and he said that we only signed him as a mate for someone else, sort of like we did for Shane Long, and that Sigurdsson just worked and worked and worked, and that was the key thing that made him the player he is today. And that's what Danny Loader has to do. That's what every young player has to do.
Yeah, I think it's important that it doesn't go to their heads. I think I listened to the World Football Phone-In, and Tim Vickery was talking about the Brazil side of the under-17 side of 2003, the last time they won the tournament, and none of them made it as professionals at the highest level. And I think it's so important not to put so much expectations on them at this stage.
Yeah, and the academy is a good talking point at the moment, because there's not quite the sort of, you know, when we had Jem Karachan, Hal Wolfson, Carney, Alex Pierce et al. All coming into the team, that isn't quite that at the moment. But there were some figures drawn up in the week by Training Ground Guru website, which said that Reading, in terms of physically producing players that are in the game at the moment, we are the 13th best academy in the country. And I think that's rather decent. They're currently, of the Premier League, there are three players who have passed through our academy at some point in their career, such as Charlie Austin, I think, is technically counted because he passed through the academy. There's six in the Championship, four in League One, and then 11 in both League Two and the National League. And again, that's just a sign that as a young academy, I think we're still quite in our youth as an academy, we are producing, and these players that we're producing are slowly getting better.
I think, especially for a club like Reading, I think the way we persuade youngsters to join the academy is by saying, look, you're more likely to get game time with us than if you went to
Man City,
for example, you know. And we saw with what's his name, Sancho, that moved to Dortmund this summer. You know, he left City because he needed minutes. And I think with Reading, if you join our academy, you're likely, if you're good enough, to get a chance. Even if it's in the Carabao Cup, you know, you're still likely to get some minutes for the first team here, younger than you would if you're at a bigger club.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the development of Jordan Obita. Mm. Whilst he wasn't that highly touted as a youngster, he's another one that he went alone, he worked and worked and worked, and he got his chance here.
He got a bit of luck as well in the fact that Adkins decided to give him a go even at left back, even though he didn't have to play him at left back. He could have moved a defender over, but that's a sort of luck and chance that I think he benefited from.
Absolutely. I think also the fact that he was the only natural left footer in that squad.
Yeah, well, definitely helped.
He's developed, and Liam Kelly, the other one that's poked his head through recently, he's definitely a jewel in the crown of this club at the moment. But the academy, it will bear fruit.
Yeah, it's difficult to see when the players will come through because this is such a results-driven business. Mm. You know, it's almost like every time they come into the team, it's almost when they're just the last resort. And we kind of thought that might change when Stam joined because he's from Ajax and Teverden. And
he believes in that system.
Believes in all that kind of system. But actually, you know, really, he's only brought through Liam Kelly.
And he let a lot of the youngsters go that we thought that were on the cusp of the first team in the summer.
Yes.
The likes of Jack Stacey.
Tariq Fosu is having a great time a bit with Charlton, isn't he? Kind of showing up the club in a little bit, even though at the time I didn't think it was a bad decision to let him go. But, you know, he's doing it.
Yeah, I think it's a case of Charlton, again, are a club that traditionally give younger players a chance.
And they were quite high in these academy rankings that we had.
I think also, just to go back to Fosu, is you look at someone like Roy Behrens and then you compare him to Fosu, who we let go in the summer.
What does Behrens give you that Fosu doesn't?
Yeah, well...
Well, Fosu's quick for a start.
Yeah. But, you know, let's not try and beat Sam with a stick. I'm sure that's coming up.
All right, well, let's beat Sam with a stick and we'll go straight on to the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
So there is no doubting what is the top of the mailbag agenda this week, and that is, of course, when will we have the return of the chocolate bar and crisp packet and hot dog for £5 deal at the Medeski Stadium? It is all that the fans want to know about, and quite frankly, we don't care whether you want to know about that because we're going to talk about Yapstam.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Good.
The topic burns on every Reading fan's tongue at the moment.
Yes. Well, Louis Burton starts us off with a question that I don't want us to linger on too often because it's a question based on, you know, the end of the season, and we are not at the end of the season. Saying, at what point do we class this as a relegation battle?
We are in a relegation battle at the moment. We are 2 points above the relegation zone.
See, I don't think we are in a relegation battle. I don't see it as that. I don't think we're in a battle of any kind at the moment. I don't care what any other team is doing. I think we're in a battle with ourselves, primarily. I don't see us as in a relegation battle. Maybe that's me being optimistic.
Yeah, there are loads of points still to play for, you know, and it's not even Christmas yet. So it's kind of silly to be thinking about relegation battle, but I kind of do agree because at the moment, it doesn't look like we're going to be pulling away anytime soon.
No, there is one thing we are not in, and that's a promotion battle.
No. And that's not going to happen this season.
I can't see...
Or even...
I can't see us gaining enough momentum over the season to be able to even creep into the playoff mix.
Mm. I reckon if we finish mid-table this season, I'd be happy with that, given where we are now.
Absolutely. I think the injuries haven't helped. I think that's abundantly clear. It's 8 first team players that you would class as regulars that have had an injury or have sustained long term injuries at this point of the season, and we can't simply run away. You know, we can't get away from that, and that has knocked the team out of its stride.
I don't think we're... Personally, I think we're in a relegation battle if we're still in the same place at Christmas. But the teams that are in there at the moment, obviously you've got Sunderland as a bit of an anomaly. Yeah. I don't think they'll they won't persist with their manager. They theoretically, or normality will resume, one would imagine. You can say the same about us. You can say the same about Birmingham under a new coach. I think it's just too early to say that we're in a relegation battle. But, you know, I can understand why you think that we would be. If you look at the table, for example, that would be a good enough reason. Matthew Everson asks, do we write this season off and play the youth? Now, I know I said we're not in a relegation battle, but if we write the season off and play our under-18 team, we will be in a relegation battle.
Yes. I mean, it's too far too early to be writing the season off and playing the youth. And besides, the squad is too big and has too many experienced first-teamers to be playing the youth team.
I'm not sure how many youth players are really knocking on the door. Obviously, we're talking about Sam Smith and, you know, Loader, I suppose. If you really want to throw him in, you can. But it's not as if I'm going to be taking out Liam Kelly or John Swift or... I mean, obviously, no one's suggesting that we are, but there aren't that many youth players that I'd say, yes, him and him in now immediately.
No, I think with the generation that has just been moved on, the Aaron Cools, the Jack Stacey's, there's no players that have immediate first-team experience that have been out on loan that, like we've said, are knocking on that door.
In terms of playing the youth, the only players that spring to mind are in the positions we mentioned earlier, striker and fullback. I think Sam Smith, Omar Richards, Tenai Watson, give them minutes here and there, see what they can do, because we're so light in those areas.
It was a case of playing a Paul McShane at right back or a Tenno Watson, and both of them have their foibles and neither are perfect, so it depends.
I would like to see maybe Richards given a chance, maybe
over Blackett
at left back, but
I just think that's unlikely.
It's very unlikely, but I think with Blackett, I think part of the problem with Blackett last season, he had competition with Abita that helped improve his form. This season, since Abita's injury, his form has completely dropped off. I think he's a player that needs to be pushed, clearly, and needs to fight for a spot.
Well, that brings us nicely onto our next question from Derek Walmsley, saying, has any player actually improved this year? Saying, what's concerning is that no one is actually showing good form and green shoots of recovery. I'd say Blackett isn't one of those players that I'd say has improved from last year. I was having a good think about this, and I think Liam Kelly at the start of the season had definitely made a step up, but he has been out of the team. I don't know if he's had little injuries, but he's regressed back to his sort of normal give and take a little bit sense in terms of not being that sort of, you know, goal getter, assist getter that we need him to become. In terms of, you know, I don't think Liam Moore is someone who's improved from last season. He was obviously coming into it from a good base. Players like Chris Gunter and John Swift, again, I don't feel like there's anyone who's actually pushed on there.
I think the problem with, you've mentioned John Swift there, I think the problem with Swift is the injuries, the hamstrings being a problem for him this season. So far, he tailed off badly towards the end of last season anyway. He wasn't performing at the level that we had seen at the start of last season when he first signed. It's a difficult one. I do agree. I don't think there's anyone that's standing out at the moment agreeing.
I agree as well, actually.
No one's pushed on from last season. If anything, a lot of them have regressed from last season.
Yeah, I'd agree for that as well. Moving on, Alex Everson has asked, injuries, let's discuss. Is this bad luck, poor training, or something else? I think certain, you know, Jordan Abita is bad luck, definitely.
Yeah.
The thing is about poor training is that we don't know enough. So I'm going to say about Jan Kermigan, him coming up with a hip injury is our own fault, because when you rely on a striker who's in his mid-30s, injuries, they do happen.
It's been playing on my mind a little bit, the whole Stephen Reid scenario over the summer when he left. Yeah. I don't know how much of an impact he would have had on the first team or what's going on, but the only real change in the backroom staff over the summer was him leaving.
And Michael Jilt's coming in.
Now, I'm not saying, you know, bring him back and everything will be
Michael
fine.
Michael Jilt's is coming in every weekend saying, guys, you know what, let's just concede goals.
Yeah. I'm not saying, you know, but it does play on my mind sometimes. I'm like, was he the reason that, you know, such and such was happening last season and it's not this season?
I mean, we don't know who's taking the training. Is Stam a hands-on manager, or is he leaving it to his backroom staff to look after the training ground? I would also throw another one in there that's not, is the Callum Harriet injury. That one was unfortunate, you know, in a game that possibly should never have even started.
Yeah, if that Fulham game gets called off, then Callum Harriott may be top scorer this year.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is a possibility.
And we don't know what the exact injuries to George Evans or...
People like Stephen Quinn have been out for... These are long-term injuries, aren't they?
We're not talking short-termers. We're talking Abita's done his ACL, Harriott's got a hamstring...
Twice. He's done his hamstring and now he's got a new injury.
Jan Kermigan with a hip. We're not talking about muscle injuries. We're talking about
ligament injuries and tears, which they do take their toll. Do we all agree that we've had a lot of injuries? Are we all agreeing on
it
that?
It does feel like we've had a lot of injuries. I don't know how many injuries we've had compared to other teams because I just haven't looked it up, but it feels like we've had more than our fair share.
I look at the team that finished last season at Wembley, and I believe there are key players, especially George Evans, who I think we all agree around this table that is a player we all like.
Would be in the team.
He'd be in my starting
lineup. He would be in my starting lineup too. It's a tough one. I think it's not something I'd like a manager to hide behind, because I think with a squad, you should have the depth to be able to cope with those injuries.
And we do have a lot of depth in the squad. You know, it's not... You talk about Callum Harriott and stuff, but it's not like we have no other winger options.
No.
Well, speaking of one, Smudger does ask, what does Behrens offer the team? I think we've briefly touched on Behrens earlier. He's doing well to be in the team at the moment, isn't he? I don't see any reason why he's above Popper in the order.
He, for me, is the classic one. He's clearly the manager's favourite. He hasn't added anything to the team much this season. I think the other person that's mentioned in there is John Swift. I think that's very harsh.
I think Swift's only just come back from injury and apparently was very promising at Sheffield United.
So. Yeah, he created the goal essentially for Behrens.
They combined.
on the Behrens thing, I do feel like he's slightly hard done by when he joined. He joined from a fairly big team in
Hertha Berlin.
Yeah. And Stan was really hyping him up. He's going, you know, he can create something from nothing. He's got so many skills and all of this lot. And he's like one of the best technical players I've ever worked with. And then we haven't seen that, like, barely ever.
He's one of those players that when you're in a team that's off form and in poor form, he's not one of those players that you can rely on to put a shift in for 90 minutes.
No, that's true.
And I think when I look at someone like Addie Popper, who's done that in the starts that he's had, he will work up and down that wing and cover his fullback. I think that's another criticism of Behrens that you have to look back to it even at last season, is that when he lost possession, he's not the type of player that would get his head down and work back and cover his fullback.
No, well, we'll see if he gets the start on Tuesday. Part of me thinks that he will. Funny that.
if Stam's still in charge, he will be.
Yeah,
I mean, we've got less than 24 hours as we're recording this for Reading to sack him before the game, so I think he probably will be. Speaking of which, David Spencer, who's the media mentor on Twitter, has asked, how long has Stam got? I want to break this down into two questions that you can both answer relatively quickly for me. Firstly, how long do you want him to have? And secondly, how long do you actually think he will get?
I'm going to be quite harsh because I'm not his biggest fan. I wasn't entirely convinced with him last season. So I reckon he's probably got until Christmas, you know, before the transfer window. If he's going to go, he's going to go slightly before then. I would rather he went sooner rather than later. But
Reading in recent history, have a history of sacking managers in December with Atkins and then Clark. Both of whom suffered similar dips in form to what Stam has experienced. This Stam side has experienced.
They probably weren't as bad in terms of cold hard results. They weren't. Even Rodgers was doing better.
And I think in terms of Atkins at that time, he had been sold a pup by Zingarevich. So there was mitigating circumstances in terms of Nigel Atkins. I'm still on the fence in terms of how long I would give him. I think I want to see results start to improve, or even performances start to improve before November's out. We have a lot of tough games in that period where you're looking at how many points are we going to get. Tomorrow is crucial. I think it's a hard one. It's a hard one tomorrow to predict.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I think that we will get a good result at Forest, or home to Forest rather. But there is that thing in my mind where I said a couple of weeks ago when it was starting to go wrong, before the Leeds game, in fact, I was thinking that those two home games, if you lose them both, I think it's hard for me to continue to backstab. If the club think, I agree with you, I think the club will take it to Christmas. Unless we get a, you know, unless we get stuffed 6-0 somewhere, I think he will keep his job.
To be fair to him and the defence, that hasn't happened this season so far. I thought
our defence isn't that bad when you compare it to the rest of the league.
I look at Minone in goal and I actually feel sorry for him, because on Saturday he could do nothing about either goal. And again against Sheffield United, he could do nothing about either goal scored.
I think in Sam's defence, he deserves until Christmas. As much as I personally wouldn't like him to stick around until Christmas, he deserves it for last season. And because of all the injuries we've mentioned, you know, he deserves a fair crack of the whip.
I think his sacking, if it comes at any point in the season, will be a victim of his own success. He's already vulnerable to that, and whatever happens, unless he keeps his job, he will always be a victim to his own success. So I can certainly see why you would keep it to Christmas. Loyal Royal says, if Stam stays, then how does the rest of the season need to pan out? Do we need to stay up? Well, yes. We'll plan for next year. Again, yes, we still need to do that regardless, I think. He says it looks awful at the moment. Are we just unlucky this season? We kind of touched on that earlier with Vandenberg's rush of blood, as he describes it, to give the penalty away, and then we're chasing the game. Luck changes, and we've spoken a few times on this podcast about how our luck has changed from last season to this one. Theo says, if Stam were to go, who would you want to replace him? And we've had another one coming in from Panners and Nutmeg saying, given the Graham Bresch one, Stam to go, if you're the board, who's your three-man shortlist to replace him? Now, I don't want us to linger on this point too much, because I think it's still a little bit early for us to be naming our Stam replacements. But any names that you're aware of, throw them at me, please. Theo said, Aitor Karanka, who does have a track record of getting promotion, aka with his only job that he's ever managed. Yeah. But if you're a fan who is looking at Stam and saying he is boring and we only ever win 1-0, Aitor Karanka is not the man that you turn to change that.
Personally, and I know this might upset some people, the person that I would be looking at seriously is someone like a Chris Wilder at Sheffield United. I think it might be hard to get it would be hard to get him away from there, but someone of his ilk, where you were, you know, I looked at that Sheffield United side on the other week, and not only did they play us off the park, they played forward. Too many times under Stam, even when we were winning, it's noticeable from throw-ins at times where there's no forward option, so it has to go back. And it's the players just don't think in a forward manner at times under Stam.
My worry with this question is that the board might go for another name. My one thing would be for them to actually go for a manager that is proven to have achieved something, rather than go for another name. Like, in my head, they'd stack Sam and then bring in De Boer. And please don't do that.
I don't think De Boer would be a good idea.
No.
I was going to say quickly, you say proven track record. Would a League 1 or League 2 based achievement be enough for
that,
you?
Yeah.
That's someone that there's the Exeter manager, Paul Tisdale, has been there for years, but he's got Exeter on a small budget, remember, to the League 2 playoff final last season, and they're up in the upper echelons of the table this season so far, and have had a really good start. He's experienced, he knows how to get the best out of a team, it seems, on the limited budget.
With a replacement would be, is it a firefighting replacement or is it a long-term option? You know, if he goes at Christmas, the board will be thinking, we need to stay up. They won't be thinking, we need to lay foundations for years to come. So you almost then get in a cycle of endless short-term managers.
An incredible, you know, some sort of Final Destination-esque flash in my mind of Sam Allardyce taking over.
God, no, please.
I don't know.
He was linked to Rangers the other day.
Oh, okay, Graham Murty, that'd be great. I don't think Murty or Parky, maybe not ready for us.
Parkinson would be a nostalgic choice. I mean, he is a manager with a track record.
Isn't he struggling at Bolton?
Although
Bolton have a lot of off-field issues.
He has I think taking them to three unbeaten, in or they have had a couple of games unbeaten recently, Bolton. But as my friend says, she would not want him back just because they remember him as a player too much.
Yeah, I agree with that, as especially someone who started watching Reading after Parkinson left, not too long after mine. I think my final thought on this before we move on to the next question is that when you said Chris Wilder, I do get the sense that, as you were saying, whether we go for a name or not as our, you know, theoretical Stam afterlife, I think that we would actually, as a club, I think the board would be ambitious and go for a championship manager who's doing well.
Yeah.
I think a Slavisa Jokanovic or someone like that, which the fans probably would be very happy with, I think we'd be quite ambitious with who we get. And, you know, that's obviously, we have no idea how that can turn out.
I think with Jokanovic, he did really well at Watford and was quite hard done by how they sacked him. He did really well at Fulham last season. He plays similar style of football, but at Fulham it's a lot quicker, it feels like.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Same thing, but quicker.
Come on, Slavisa.
Can we clone him?
Yeah, come on.
Well, that's I guess that's the official Tarlhurst End recommendation. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to say we're officially backing someone else as team manager. Final question, Ben Brenton says, given the amount of problems that Reading have had this season and that we overachieved last year, can we really hold it against Stam? I guess is it not his fault? I can understand why there'd be a couple of issues, but for me, it's just that lack of tactical and selection progress that we haven't seen that is ultimately entirely down to Stam, in my mind.
I think in part, you have to have the players to be able to play what he wants. I look at, there's two key injuries for me at the moment, and one is Jordan Obita. He is very key to how the system is, and he's out for the season. The other is George Evans, because I think he's very calm on the ball and in possession, and he always looks to go forward with the ball, and those two are missing from the side. We don't know how long Evans is out for, do we?
No. I don't even know what he has, to be honest. No. The club are very secretive over their injuries, yeah, aren't they?
So, can I hold it against Stam? No, but when you play Paul McShane out of position, when you've got Tyler Blackett on the bench, and you've asked Chris Gunter to go over to left back, that's not a decision that...
It's not a decision he wants to make, is it?
No.
Do you know what? I feel kind of bad for always beating Stam over the head with a stick, as I've already said. But, you know, it's not all Stam's fault. He has had injuries. Players are out of form. Players aren't doing what they should do. But equally, this is where the stick comes swinging. The but. You say he needs the players to be able to play the way he wants to play. He hasn't got those players, so why is he sticking to what he's trying to play?
Well, I think the example is Leeds, of when he changed it, they had a positive result. He obviously went up there. He looked at them after the international break and he said, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to set up, and we were hard to beat on that day and we got the result. I think part of my problem with Stam is that he's a classic, he's a bit like Atkins in that he tries to adapt to the team he's playing too much. There's no thought to allowing the opposition to think about what we can do against them.
Reactive as opposed to proactive.
Yeah, he's
He doesn't have a settled 11, does he?
No.
Well, that has been one of the major issues when I talk about selection. I don't know what his favourite. Like, I know what my favourite formation and setup is, but I have no idea what his favourite formation, who his favourite centre back pairing are, who his favourite central midfield pairing are. I mean, we know his favourite strikers, Kermigan, but what his favourite wingers, and are those the correct wingers to be favourites?
Well, I think we know one favourite winger.
This is the thing. Is it the correct option? And this is the debate, is it going to rage on Forest on Tuesday night? We're going to look ahead to that now. Anyone who's listening to this podcast after Tuesday night, you can obviously listen to our predictions and laugh at us as to how optimistic we are when we get beat 6-0. So join us for that in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Nottingham Forest at home then on Tuesday night, and well, it was quite easy to do your scouting report on Nottingham Forest because they were on the TV on Saturday. Anyone who watched that would have seen a young lad called Kieran Dowell score a hat-trick away at Hull City, which isn't really the ideal thing that I want my opposition players to be doing before they come to the Daisy Stadium. But the fact is that Nottingham Forest, they're only 11th, but they're in decent form.
Yeah, it feels that way. Without knowing who's going to be fit and available, I don't know what team he's going to be able to play or put out.
Who's Stam?
Stam.
Yeah.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, rather.
Forest have won 3 of the last 4 and they score goals, and Reading don't keep goals out. So.
Yeah, well, they've only failed to score twice in their 14 league games this season. And another interesting stat for anyone who's going to be betting on this, hashtag gamblerware,
yeah,
is that Forest have won 7 and lost 7, 0 draws. So we're looking at a team that perhaps they'll turn up, perhaps they won't. If they do, they'll probably win. If they don't, maybe we'll win.
That's typical mid-table side then.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, it's a bit of a luxury to have at this moment. The bookies odds at the moment, while we're on that topic, Reading at 5-4 to win at home to a team 11th in the table. That's a little bit depressing, isn't it? Not Forest at 9-4, so we are the favourites. Draw is 5-2. What I want to focus on in this part of the show, just to end on, is what does Stam need to do to A, win, B, lose and keep his job, and C, what does he have to do to get sacked in this game?
I think get sacked, it has to be a catastrophic 6-0 result. Six or, you know, a right hammering we're talking about here.
And all the fans booing at the end, that yeah, sort of, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would say for him to get sacked, yes, maybe not 6-0, but lose convincingly, but on top of that, it's how he talks to the media and to the fans, because he's getting increasingly spiky. And if he keeps making these little jabs at fans and at the local press and all this kind of thing, he's not going to win any.
Well, I didn't do
fans.
Brendan Rodgers any favours, did it?
No.
Him and Tim Deller. Some people always blame Deller for getting Rodgers sacked.
Yeah, watch out what you say to Deller tomorrow. It's just
Is it AD Williams now who does the post-match interviews on Hawks, or has it come back to Deller?
Can't say it. I listen, because I listen to only the best quality of podcasts. Nothing against podcasts. I drive home too quickly, I think, to get their interviews at the end of the game.
I think for me, I just want to see an improved performance. I think if they get a result in terms of a point out of this game, I'd be happy, considering the form. They need to stop the rot in terms of they've had 2 defeats on the bounce now, and 3 of the last 4 games have been defeats. I would take a point from this game.
What do Reading have to do to win this game then, Steve?
Show up. play a striker. I think, you know what, they just need to actually really want it, not keep their heads high. I'm going to talk in cliches now, but keep your heads up.
It's a tough place to go.
Yeah, place to go. Well, what the Mad said.
Yeah, it's not actually.
One win in how many games so far this season?
But they need to keep their heads up. They, whatever happens, they need to know what they're trying to do. They need to have the confidence in what Stam wants them to do, and they need to have some kind of tempo to their play. I've banged on about this every time I speak about Reading at the moment, but they're too slow.
Yeah.
Too predictable. They need to up the tempo. They need to pass it around. They need to give it to creative players and let them have some room to manoeuvre and do something exciting.
I would also say on that point, I would not start Vandenberg. I would bring Dave Edwards in instead, because I think Edwards is that steady Eddie who knows the league. He's been around long enough. He captained Wolves for long enough as well.
Yeah,
to be a steady influence in that team. And I think I would actually try and play maybe 2 anchor in midfielders, maybe with Kelly alongside him, or even George Evans if he's fit.
Yeah, well, I wrote a piece on the website a few weeks ago now, so crying out for 4-2-3-1, and I mean, we probably don't have the personnel for it at the moment, but it would still be my ideal formation. I'd like a prediction from you then, lads. I know you're not part of the prediction league, but I would nonetheless like you to predict what's going to happen. I've gone optimistic this midweek and said a 1-0 win for Reading. To further accentuate that, I think it's going to be a first half penalty. I think we're going to get a bit of... I just foresee maybe just a little bit of luck finally falling our way, maybe a handball or something. And then I do genuinely think that if we get a lead in this game, it's going to be very hard to rip it off us.
I said on Saturday to the people that I speak to, I'm not predicting games at the moment, just because I don't know.
That's a very easy thing to say.
I don't know what the team is going to be. I mean, or who's going to be playing. As I said earlier, I would take a draw, just to stop the rot. Just
throw some scores in. Just say it.
1-1.
Yeah,
that's a score.
I would take 1-1.
Personally, I'm, I. I'm in a bit of a negative funk with Reading at the moment, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 loss.
2-1 loss. Well, I don't blame you, because I went for a 2-0 loss at home on the weekend, and as such, that meant I picked up three lovely points in the prediction league. And quite amazingly, in a sense, with Handbags also going for a defeat, but 1-0, he's also picked up a point. That means there's only six of us in this prediction league. Five of us now have a joint lead at the top on 7 points, and then Westie's just behind on six. So I'll get everyone's predictions for Tuesday night and also for Saturday as we go to Derby. Any final thoughts on the Derby game? I do think that it's the type of game, if we're going to sack Stam, it kind of reminds me of when we had McDermott installed as caretaker and we went away to Bristol City, a similar sort of game we nicked a point at. Maybe if we get a bad defeat, it's the type of game to make a change, bring someone in, just stick two banks of four in front of Derby, a couple of strikers, you know, Barrow or Smith or whatever. Just do the basics right and just get the basics right. That's the type of game. Just don't give them anything because they're already on a decent amount of form.
Derby are one of those teams that absolutely scare me because they've got so many good players and it seems like finally under Gary Rowett they've actually got a manager that knows how to get the best out of that squad.
Talking about managers that could replace Stam, wouldn't mind Rowett.
Yeah, good luck with that one, mate.
You know, I think last season with it proved that at Birmingham what a good manager he is. I don't know, with Derby, we haven't got a terrible record up there of late. We have won games up there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, we beat them 3-0 on the last day a few seasons ago. We've beaten them 3-1 before. With Nick Blackman, sorry,
and the famous FA Cup game where the only
time Yakubu played for Reading, as statistics will show.
Yeah, so it's not an unhappy hunting ground. It's just at the moment they are flying. They are Gary Rowett seems to have got them going.
Yeah, definitely.
So. I'm not seeing a positive result at the end of this regardless
but
of Stam.
Equally we say all this but you never know, Stam can turn it around and we'll have two wins.
Well, I was going to say bear in mind that I am actually going to Derby. I would like some some positivity from you Hoops to end on. Give us a positive take.
We have won there and they might underestimate us and then we'll show up and pass all over them and
They'll be so astounded that we're passing the ball around. They'll be like, hang on, Reading don't pass the ball. What is this?
Roy Fearins to get the winner, come off the bench and get the winner.
He won't come off the bench, he'll be starting.
Yeah, this is very true. That's a very unrealistic expectation to have. Well, this podcast will be back, I should imagine, on Monday or Tuesday next week. We'll have a clean week. In fact, we'll have the entire international break then because we have two games left now and then it's off to World Cup playoff fun if you're a fan of Greece or Croatia or, of course, the Irish teams. And we'll be back then. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end of this podcast. We'll be back with episode 143 in due course. I've been Mark Mayer, and thank you very much for listening to the Tyler Stam podcast. Two games now. We can only win them. Come on, you ass.